This is Janet Gallen welcoming you to Love Letters Live with naturally something wonderful again. Robin L. Flanagan is a freelance and, by the way, very wonderful writer for magazines and newspapers, and I'm going to just ask you to fill that part in. Also the mother of an adorable 8-year-old daughter named Anna Lee. And a husband named?
Patrick.
Talk about, I know that you've got a book you're working on. Talk about the book and how you came to this writing. And I want to say, P.S., I hope everybody gets to read your writing.
Thank you.
Because it's wonderful and uninhibited and generous in how much you share.
I appreciate that very much. The book I'm writing is about a woman who has a lot to share and is very generous. Her name is Bonnie.
You're saying the book I'm writing is about a woman, so it's not autobiographical directly.
It is not.
Uh-huh.
It is a true story. It's
okay.
Narrative nonfiction. So it's the true story of a 2-time cancer survivor who comes home one night to find that her husband has passed away.
Oh, my
and
goodness. How old is... She's
in her 50s at this point, and she mourns their adventurous life together for about 18 months before deciding to push past her grief and do something drastic, which is to climb to the top of the world's tallest freestanding mountain, and that's Kilimanjaro.
She did this?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
And that's how I met her, actually.
Oh, you know her.
Mm-hmm. I met her through training for this climb.
So you did it also?
I did it also. Yes, okay. And so we started training in 2007, trained for about a year, climbed in February 2008, and along the way, she unexpectedly falls in love with one of our fellow climbing companions, and so by the time she reaches the summit, she realizes she's stronger than she thinks, and she's ready for a new life with another man. So it's a very beautiful story full of hope and resilience. And we just both hope that it helps people who feel like their life is at a standstill.
Oh, I'm so glad. Okay, this is so just fate. Because 2 days ago, in talking to one of my guests, her husband had been very sick for a long time, and she lost her husband. And a couple of years later, she has now found someone else. And she is fortunate, of course, in having found and having been able to love two men so deeply. And we started a whole conversation on losing love and finding it again. And I think we can't talk enough about this.
Bonnie talks,
so glad that you're doing this.
Bonnie talks a lot about how there's not a previous life and a future life,
right.
And how it's just all part of the same story, and that her first husband is as much a part of her life as her second husband, which I think is another beautiful message, that you don't have to say goodbye.
You don't have to say goodbye, and you shouldn't. You shouldn't. It doesn't disrespect the love of one to make a life with somebody else eventually.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, so what else do you know from this?
Well, what I love is the backstory.
Please.
You know, I blogged once about how every book should have a juicy backstory, and I think this one does. So we climbed, like I said, in February of 2008.
Yes.
And how the book came to be was in October of 2008, my husband and I were celebrating our 10th wedding anniversary at a resort, eating breakfast, overlooking this beautiful lake, and I was lamenting the fact that I'd been wanting to write a book for a very long time, and I'd been trying to work on a memoir, but it wasn't really going anywhere because I'm a trained journalist, and as a result, when people give me information, I have only that information to work from, and I can write the story, no problem, but I was finding that I had my entire life to draw from at any moment, and it was becoming way too overwhelming. And so my husband says, "Why don't you write about Bonnie?"
Oh.
And my first reaction was, "Well, that's a great idea, but she would have to be so open about so many very sad, sad moments in her life, and I don't know if she would be up for that, but okay, I'll call her on Monday." This was a Saturday morning. "I'll call her on Monday and see how it goes." So Monday morning comes. I call her. I'm a nervous wreck. I blab and blab and blab.
What made you nervous about it?
Because I knew that this was a very difficult part of her life that she had been through.
You didn't want to bring her sadness? Is that you felt like the...
I didn't want her. That's an interesting question. I've never been asked that. I think that to ask someone to not only be open with me, but potentially so many strangers about what she'd been through, I wasn't quite sure how that would be received. Mm-hmm. It's a very vulnerable place to be. So I was nervous that I was asking her something that I didn't really have a right to ask her to do.
Okay.
So, I, like I said, I was blabbing, and when I was done, there was this kind of awkward silence, mm-hmm. and I didn't know what she was thinking. And then she said, "Robin, on Saturday morning, probably around the time you were having breakfast, I was praying, and I said, 'God, I don't know how, but it's time. It's time I tell my story.'"
Oh, I would be just in tears here.
"And Robin, God brought you to me." At which point, I started crying.
Oh, my goodness.
And I just knew at that moment that this was meant to be, regardless of how long it takes, which is something I've gone back to over these last 5 years as I have been reporting and reporting and reporting and writing and mm-hmm. then reporting and writing. I keep going back to that moment. And it propels me. I know that this is what's supposed to happen.
Well, I'm glad to hear you say everything you're saying. But, and this, when you started to say, you know, "I was nervous about calling her," I'm thinking, but you're going to be the vehicle by which she gets to share the beauty of this story and focus on an important journey. And given that you yourself are so easy about sharing intimate moments that have propelled you ahead, I was surprised that you wouldn't just see that, okay, I'm going to let somebody else have the same opportunity, but you're a nice person and a sensitive person. So, oh, that is just wonderful.
Well, I know not everybody is like myself. You know, some people have things happen to them and they keep it to themselves.
Yes.
And this was such a brutal thing that had happened.
Yes.
That I wasn't sure what she would.
On the other hand, you were catching her at the beautiful end of her journey, not the depth of. And I have a question about people's being receptive to requests like this. You know, when people make an overture of friendship or some kind of intimate connection, and the fear is they're not gonna like it. I think at some level, everybody is receptive to that. It just depends on when you get it and when and how you deliver it. What do you think?
I think it also has to do with your spiritual connection with other people. Yeah. You know how sometimes you just meet somebody and you click?
Oh, and sometimes you meet somebody and you go ick and you run out of the room. Yes, of course.
And I don't think.
It's ick or click.
Right.
Yes.
And I know, it's not just that I don't think, I know that this project would not be what it is if we did not have the relationship that we have.
Now, are you checking with her at various points of the book? Is she reading it along with you, or are you just on your own?
As far as the reporting goes, it's been constant because I'll go to write a scene and I'll think, well, how did she get from this side of the room to that side of the room? And I'll ask her about that. And it's a lot of it's been through email. At first, it was hours and hours of in-person reporting. But now I just email her whenever I have a question.
Because now you know her well enough that you don't need to look in her eyes when she's talking?
No, it's more that I have so much of the story already that now I'm just getting the details to make it more readable, to make the reader feel like they're there. And that's to answer your other part of the question, is that I kind of feel nauseous every time I think about her reading this book. I have been able to read two scenes to her over all this time. That's all I've done. And the first time was not even it was a part of the book that was, it was a difficult moment for her, but by far not one of the worst. And so I thought it was an okay scene to read to her. And I did. And at the end, there was, again, this very awkward silence. And she has this just not a good look on her face at all. And I started getting very worried. And I said, "How was that?" And she said, "Awful." And then I just waited. And then she said, because you put me right back there.
Okay.
And at that moment I knew, okay, I'd done what I had set out to do. And then the other scene made her laugh out loud. And she said the same thing about how it felt like she was back there again. So I thought, okay, that's good.
I know this from my own life. when you get somebody down on paper just perfectly, it's such a relief to the, not only to you, but it's a relief to the person about whom you're writing to be seen in a true light, don't you think?
Perhaps, just because I haven't been on the end of it, but on my end, it's an honor.
Yes, that too, of course.
Yeah.
And do you have a title for this or not yet?
Well, that's an interesting question too. I do. It's a working title called The Height of Hope.
Mm-hmm.
It's metaphorical. There's a literal height, the summit of Kilimanjaro is 19,341 feet. And I always joke that I never even leave off the one because every foot really mattered when we were on that mountain.
Yes.
Yes. But, you know, I'm here in San Francisco for the San Francisco's Writers Conference. San Francisco Writers Conference. And I've gotten some mixed feedback on that title. So, you know, it doesn't have to be, it is hard, and it doesn't have to be set in stone. So that's my working title right now.
May I ask you, I'm curious what the mixed feedback is, because their titles are really important, and they can't be this, and they can't be that, and they're different opinions. May I ask what some of them are?
Yeah, well, the main one was just that it sounded a little too trite, a little too general, and too self-helpish, kind of.
So that you don't get the feeling of the specific behind it.
Uh-huh. And maybe the subtitle, once I nail that down, will take care of that too.
Yes.
I mean, so much, this whole time people have asked me what the title of the book has been, and I've always said, I'm going to wait until it's done. I'm going to read it. And then I love when an image is plucked from the text.
Yes.
However, when I decided a mere 3 weeks ago to attend this conference and still did not have a title, I was kind of caught between a rock and a hard place and needed to come up with one. So I did the best I could with help from my friends and family.
Good, because that's important, because if you don't have anything, that blank slot, a blank piece of paper is not your best friend.
Right.
Sometimes, you know, when you need to, and to have something down that you can correct or change, isn't that a step forward?
Definitely.
Yeah.
It's good to be getting all of this feedback.
Well, you know, we're just going to keep people through however I can do it posted. So when it's out, everybody will get to know. Can you talk about some of your other writing?
Oh, sure.
I would love you to, because we met just by happenstance, and I'm so glad. It was over the internet, and Robin had written a gorgeous piece on...
my daughter?
Yes.
my daughter being adopted.
Well, also the pregnancies and the what you went through, and just the most gorgeous adventure. Difficult as it was when you read
a different type of adventure,
so when you read it from, as I did, from the outside, and then you get to this beautiful little girl, you just want to stand up and cheer.
Oh,
so maybe you could talk about that.
I will, and it kind of, you know, funny enough, I had mentioned earlier about this memoir that wasn't working for me. The memoir was about my infertility journey. It was 5.5 years. The short version is that within a 13-month period, my husband and I had gone through 3 in vitros, 3 pregnancies, and 3 pregnancy losses. And we did one more in vitro a few months after that, but by then we had started the adoption process. And the way that I can still share my story and help other people, which is, I think, another reason why I was drawn to Bonnie, is that's exactly what she wants to do.
And we learn from intimate stories shared by others.
I truly believe that. Yes. And so the way that I do that is by writing essays about my life as someone who has been through infertility, as someone who is an adoptive mother, and our life that way. And my first essay that was in an anthology, it was an anthology of essays by birth mothers and about birth mothers. My story was about the first real conversation we had with my daughter, and she was 2. The first real conversation about adoption that we'd had with my daughter, and she was two. And the way that she made sense of this whole concept was remarkable and very mature.
Yes.
And so I think...
Do you want to say what it is? Because it was so lovely.
Oh, if I could sum it up, sure. So at the end... At the end of the essay, it just talks about how we're at the dining room table, kind of trying to explain to her why. One of her questions was why mommy and daddy have no babies, mm-hmm. And so we were kind of explaining that to her. And behind me on a cabinet was a huge vase of flowers and a very small Christmas cactus, some other small plant. Mm-hmm. And she got up from her chair after we were done talking, and she goes behind me and she picks up the small plant, and you know, she asks if I will hold it, and she gets the big plant and she puts the small plant next to the big plant, and she basically says, adopted. Mm-hmm. You know, that was her vision of that, was that the big plant takes care of the small plant.
Yes.
When you put them together.
Yes.
And it was just a beautiful
image. She also
image.
Said something really insightful about, I think it wasn't, you correct me because I don't know if I'm going to get it right, but my memory of not just what you wrote, but the intensity and reality behind it is so important. It's so vivid. when you were saying how lucky you were to have gotten Anna Lee.
Yes, yes. We were walking in a parking lot.
That was important.
Yep, we were walking into a parking lot and we were late getting to a first communion, but there was something about that moment that made me just stop and slow my step and look at her like often happens. And I just think, how did I get so lucky? And I asked her that question. How did I get so lucky that God gave you to me? And immediately, without a beat, she looked at me and she said, Jessica was lucky to find you.
Oh,
and Jessica is her birth mother.
Yes.
And I just thought, oh.
I thought the same thing and said it about that articulately. Because, oh, just it groaned because how wonderful for her to grow up knowing mm-hmm. or feeling somehow the wisdom of knowing that the birth mother needs to feel lucky that her baby is going to be forever taken care of and treasured. I mean, that whole business about finding homes for babies and, mm-hmm. it's gorgeous when it works the best.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome.
I have a question about love letters
mm-hmm.
because that's what I am about. And every story I know that every one of life experiences has the seeds in it for a love letter to someone. Your life, of course, has the seeds for a forest. And do you write them? I mean, I know that you write beautifully. Do you think of them as love letters when you write these essays?
That's interesting, because I do. I think that I want Anna Lee to know how I feel every step of the way, and especially as an adopted child, we talk very openly about the struggle that my husband and I went through and how difficult it was and even now.
So she has
she
the
knows.
Feeling that she's the one meant for you.
Exactly. Exactly. Because she'll still see me tear up if I think about a particular time and hardship we went through. And I just say, can you imagine that? During that time, we had no idea. It was you. It was you. And if we hadn't gone through every single thing, the timing just wouldn't have worked. We had 3 weeks notice that we were going to be parents to her. And so it just wouldn't have worked any other way.
Right. What a powerful position in life for a child to grow up knowing that.
I hope so.
I
hope so.
And so my question about love letters is, I'm such a believer in taking these moments and writing them on paper, putting them in an envelope, stamping them and mailing them. And even though it's going to your own house, she gets mail. There's something about that. She gets an envelope that is with something in it that is custom designed for her and hers alone, both emotionally and legally, to have forever.
I think it's a beautiful idea.
And
I haven't done that, but I think it's a beautiful idea.
It doesn't take long.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't take long. It's a matter of maybe, and I mean, I'm just advising this for all parents and all grandparents. I do it. I do it with my daughters. I do it with my granddaughter, who's now six. And I went there one day, and she she was looking for something, and she went to this big drawer she has, and it turns out that little thing, since the age of maybe 3, has been filing away every single letter in its envelope.
That's so sweet.
It's going to mean so much, because someday we're not going to be here. And we are going to leave a legacy of comfort when people find, at all stages of life, when you look back and you find a love letter from your mother, let's say you're 10, and you find something she wrote at 3, there's a continuity. So, and it's your history in your own hand.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever written a letter, a love letter to Jessica, for example? Or is that inappropriate?
It's not inappropriate at all, but I've written, she's made her way into another essay that was in an anthology, and it was about her and how, the title of it was Moving Close.
Mm-hmm.
She was in Rochester, she was going to be moving to Buffalo, and I had such mixed emotions about that, and I didn't know why. And so the way that I figured it out was by writing an essay about our relationship. And I did figure it out. And it was that we were in this together.
Yes.
And we shared a bond that I didn't have with anybody else.
Right.
And I was going to miss her.
Well, that is a love letter.
Right.
So the only thing that makes it a real love letter is putting it in an envelope and mailing it to her.
Right.
So my thought there is, because there's something about having something in your handwriting to go along with this. I think it makes such sense when you write an essay like that to just make a copy, stick it in an envelope, and saying, this is just from me to you with love, and turning it into something that shifts it a little tiny bit. So many, so many to write. What about Anna Lee? I mean, she's obviously, she's 8 now, so she's writing and reading. And
she's an amazing writer, but she doesn't like to write.
Is that right?
Her imagination is out of this world. And but the act of writing, she doesn't particularly enjoy. But
to
she comes
down
up
and do
to
it,
sit down.
Mm-hmm.
But she comes up with the, I've been keeping a quote book from her.
Oh, good.
By her, these
yes.
quotes by her, since she was 3.
Mm-hmm.
And so for Christmas every year, I compile a list by month with a picture and
wonderful.
Put it in an album for my mom. But everybody else now wants the list of quotes.
Yes, of course.
She's got this reputation now, and she just comes out with some doozies.
Oh, so
she's
creative. You're going to have all kinds of trails behind you
yes.
of the love of this whole family and your friends. And what... when you say she has quite an imagination, what does she have? Is her head filled with people or?
She's got a very artistic mind,
mm-hmm.
which I don't feel I have. Like I said, I'm a journalist, so I feel like I know how to ask questions in order to get details so that I can then write something. But
writing beautifully as you do is an art.
Well, thank you.
Not every journalist does that.
Well, thank you. But I guess I'm a very literal
yes,
thinker,
yes.
and she's very abstract. So you can, you know that game where you can pick up any object, and then they do this on Whose Line Is It Anyway, and then you just come up with all of these different uses for the shape, you know? She's got one of those minds where
nice.
She can just pick up anything and turn it into something
mm-hmm.
beautiful.
So if there's a lot going in that head,
mm-hmm.
and it's complicated, I can see where sitting down to write it would be daunting.
It might be. She starts a lot of things.
Yes.
She's got a play going on with Pippi Longstocking. But she says, she'll say something, and I'll tell her how poetic it is, and
uh-huh.
she'll say, I'm not William Shakespeare.
So you're running into the problem that you're going to see more about probably later, and maybe remember from your own mother, that the respect and awe you have over your children's talents and abilities and looks and everything else gets pretty much discounted.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you're
it's
my mother.
It's from my mother. Yes.
As if we are...
Yes.
You know,
not a good judge of character.
Well, not a good judge of character, and have maybe a 12 IQ, so we can't see anyway. And that's just part of it. Yes,
mm-hmm.
That doesn't mean you shouldn't keep doing it, because someday they will take a look at those notes or those something and say, "Oh, you know, my mother wasn't so empty-headed about me after all." Yes. Oh well, I want to thank you so much for doing this with me.
Thank you so much.
I'm hoping that you will let me know pretty immediately when that book is coming out.
I will, for sure.
Okay. Because all I can tell you is to read this woman's writing, there's something so generous about the way you write.
Thank you.
And there's something about, I think, the writers who just get in there and have kind of no holds barred. And I have a feeling, I don't know if you were always like that, maybe you were, that kind of nothing human is alien. Even things that are difficult, by the time you write them down, they're information that is worth passing on. What do you think of... I find that in love letters workshops, you know, people don't want to say this and they're embarrassed to say that. Just write it down. You'll see that it's lovely.
Mm-hmm.
What gets you from having a very, very difficult time in life that is just heartbreaking? And you talked about, you know, looking at other mothers who were pregnant and the other people who were having children and you were being left out of this beautiful part of life.
Mm-hmm.
Turns out you were just taking much longer to deliver that baby. But at what point do you get to take a difficult experience and be able to write it down, even through heartbreak, and share it?
I think what guides me is that I know I'm not the only person to be going through this right now. And when you put it out there, you start hearing from other people about their experiences. And it's just a way to be connected to the other people on this planet,
okay,
which I think is a very special,
yes,
special thing.
Yes. Okay, I was wondering if you were going to say connected, even more than guiding other people,
mm-hmm,
which is kind of a nice byproduct, because people who haven't gone through that or will go through that get to be guided in hope.
And again, there's that honor that comes in the guiding, but I think more than that, because that puts you on a different plane. I think we're on the same plane. It's just that some of us are in different stages,
right,
of the process.
Yes. Yes. So, and guiding, you don't want to put yourself in that position of,
right,
being the guide.
Right.
You want to say,
a conduit. It's like,
yes,
a conduit.
And
instead,
we're all in this together.
Mm-hmm.
If everybody, I mean, we're all on the same ship. If everybody does something, we stay afloat.
Right.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
I want to just say that I will be back to you all in some form, hopefully again with Robin, when this book is out. And just until next time, I want to say thank you again, and to remind you all that if you think you need to wait for a special occasion to write a love letter, writing a love letter is a special occasion. Those of you who do it know that that's true, and that everything you write can be, with a little shift, turned into an actual deliverable love letter if you just put it in an envelope and mail it to someone. Thank you. This is Janet Gallen saying goodbye, and...
Thank you so much for listening. I appreciate it.
Goodbye to Robin Flanagan. I'll talk to you later. Thank you, dear.
Bye-bye.